Hold on to your hats, folks, because the Outlaw Crypto Podcast is about to blow your mind. We're diving headfirst into the belly of the beast with none other than Callisti Cash, the mastermind behind Celine Wallet, the Bitcoin Cash Renegade. Callisti Cash is not just a name. He's a digital freedom fighter, a warrior in the battle against the tech tyrants and the shadowy banking cabal that hijacked Bitcoin. That's right, the very same puppet masters who dared to chain Bitcoin to their custodial shackles, stripping it of its decentralized soul. But Callisti Cash, with his fiery spirit and unyielding resolve, said no more. Enter Celine Wallet, the torchbearer of the true Bitcoin vision, as laid out by the great Satoshi Nakamoto. This is the wallet that puts the power of peer-to-peer digital cash right in your pocket, free from the prying eyes of Big Brother and the corrupt financial overlords. Celine Wallet is your gateway to a global digital economy powered by Bitcoin Cash, also known as BCH, which many believe is the real Bitcoin, untainted by the foul stench of centralized control. Why Bitcoin Cash, you ask? Because BCH is the fork that stayed true to Satoshi's dream, unlike BTC, which was hijacked by the very banks and venture capitalists Satoshi sought to circumvent. The BTC chain, with its artificial block size limits and false promises of scalability through the Lightning Network and other custodial layer twos, has become a den of censorship and corporate greed. But BCH, oh glorious BCH, has forged its own path, embracing the ethos of decentralization and freedom. Callisti Cash and the Bitcoin Cash community are the torchbearers of this revolution. They're the libertarian cypherpunk rebels who refuse to bow down to the banking elite. They're the ones who kept the flame of true digital cash alive, even as BTC became a playground for the oligarchs and their sidechain minions. On this episode, we'll expose the censorship, the lies, and the sinister agenda to force users into AML, KYC, verified hellscapes. And Callisti Cash will show us how Celine Wallet and Bitcoin Cash are the ultimate weapons against this digital dystopia. So brace yourselves for a mind-bending journey into the heart of the crypto resistance. We're tearing down the walls of deception and shining a light on the true path to digital freedom. With Callisti Cash leading the charge, the Outlaw Crypto Podcast is ready to ignite the flames of rebellion.
All right, we're back with another episode of the Outlaw Crypto Podcast. I'm your host, Paranoia Machinery, and this is a podcasting 2.0 podcast, which means that you can stream sats, you can boost through the Fountain app, value for value, like Adam Curry always says. If you find value in the podcast, send me some sats. And then we also accept privacy coins because this is a privacy first podcast. You can donate with Monero, Wownero, and a variety of other privacy coins. Today, my guest is Callisti Cash, who is the lead developer for the Celine wallet in Bitcoin Cash, which I think is the real Bitcoin, the one true Bitcoin currently. So welcome to the show, Callisti. Happy to have you on. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's nice to be here. Thanks for the invite. It's going to be nice to chat with you here, you know, face to face, because yeah, I've only really seen you on Twitter here and there. I think it's going to be a good conversation. Just you strike me as a pretty cool guy already, so I'm excited for this. I'm feeling pretty good though.
How nice. Are you? Me too. I'm doing excellent. I'm super stoked to have you on the show, and I can't wait to get into this Bitcoin Cash stuff because, if I want to be honest with the audience, I was a Bitcoin maximalist for a long time. When the fork happened and Bitcoin Cash split off on its own chain, I was in the BTC camp. I sold my BCH, and I only recently, like within the last year or two, have kind of changed my position on this and become a Bitcoin Cash as the real Bitcoin person after witnessing the corporate takeover of Bitcoin and how it's been made like unusable, expensive, and slow. So welcome to the show. Tell me why you are in the Bitcoin Cash world.
So I got into Bitcoin Cash, I guess to make the long story short, I'm in it because, I mean, like you, I think it's the real Bitcoin. I just really believe in the actual Bitcoin mission, peer-to-peer cash for the world. You know, when I actually think about the practical applications of a crypto like BCH, it just blows my mind every time I think of something new about it. So that's why I'm in BCH. But the longer story is I got into it actually in 2021. So even though I got my first Bitcoin ever back in 2011 from a faucet, basically I wasn't involved in Bitcoin.
Did you lose that Bitcoin or did you hold on to it?
I have the wallet file, don't have the password, can probably crack the password, haven't bothered to do it. I mean, it'd get me like a cool $500 right now if I did. But a little tiny faucet amount back then, and just, yeah, crazy how that ends up. But yeah, I got into BCH in 2021 because my friend was big into Ethereum. And he's like, man, you got to get a Coinbase account. We got the referral link. So we got our little $10 of BTC. He was showing me on Ethereum. And this is the same time that GameStonk, that's what I call it, happens. And I have another friend who's like, dude, you got to get in on this. And I'm just like, okay, well, I guess I'm an investor now. because it kind of followed naturally from years prior, me just starting to take an interest, you know, becoming a little more of an adult, right? So it's kind of funny, back in 2011, I just didn't understand, don't know anything at that age.
Just like messing around and like happened to like stumble upon a faucet and get some Bitcoin?
Because I was already into like computers and tech and programming and stuff.
Oh, okay.
I've just known that computers are going to be like my whole life. I first got on a computer when I was like 2 years old. I started writing QBasic in third grade.
Nice.
I just always knew that something like this was going to be what I do with my life. So yeah, I was just big into computer stuff back then. And so, oh, this new fancy technology, Bitcoin rolling around, let's take a look and see what it is. But I just didn't understand like the broader implications like I do now.
Okay.
But browsing Coinbase, I was just like, I see BCH for the first time. And I'm just like, who would just want to get fake Bitcoin? Because I didn't know anything about anything. And then with all of those investment events happening, I'm the kind of person who really likes doing due diligence and actually knowing things. So I just went down a research rabbit hole on GameStop and on all of this crypto stuff. And a lot of my 2021 and 2022 was just spent every single day learning more and more, and just trying to figure out what's real and what's not and what's meaningful as far as like fundamentals. You know, what actually makes a stock have a price? What actually makes a crypto have value? All these kind of questions I need to answer for myself so that I know what I'm actually getting into. And with all those questions, I eventually stumbled upon the subreddit rBTC, which is probably the best archive of all of the stuff that happened during the block size wars. And hopefully it stays that way, but the future is bleak in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, then I found out about the block size war basically, and I had already had some context for things like WikiLeaks and like Gavin, like stuff like that, just from kind of, and like Silk Road, like all that kind of stuff, just from, and just being in the sphere, right? But it wasn't until learning that and then kind of putting together what I learned about GameStop and just my own general ideas on various, what you might call conspiracies. To me, it was a no-brainer. Oh yeah, Bitcoin is hijacked? Absolutely. I can see the incentives clear as day. So BCH is the real Bitcoin, duh. And then from then on, I was a BCH maxi.
Okay. That's interesting, because there like is a huge amount of propaganda for the other side of the story. So it seems to me unlikely that somebody would take that route. Like, it seems like you, as a newcomer, would probably fall victim to the propaganda and be sold a different narrative. Did you?
Yeah, because initially, right, because I first saw green Bitcoin on Coinbase, I said, why would I buy fake Bitcoin when BTC is at $69,000 right now, right?
Okay, okay. How long were you a Bitcoiner before you made the transition to becoming a BCHer?
It was pretty short-lived, to be honest. Okay. Unfortunately, I did shill somebody in real life on Bitcoin. They asked me, what is Bitcoin? And me thinking that I'm a tech expert, I'm like, Bitcoin is digital gold. And so yeah, that was just me parroting something that I didn't actually know or realize. And it wasn't until, I think if I didn't exactly have the context for like 2011 Bitcoin, maybe I would have like fallen more victim to it, but probably not. I'm kind of like bullshit resistant, to be honest.
Nice. So I guess for the majority of my audience, I would say that they are Bitcoiners. They believe BTC is Bitcoin. Make the case for BCH and why you think like BCH is the better version of Bitcoin.
All right. My favorite way to approach this, download Celine Wallet if you haven't already. Pick your favorite Bitcoin, BTC, or Lightning wallet, period. Just pick one. All right, now compare the experience side by side of me sending you money right here, right now, side by side. Most people aren't going to actually do that challenge. I've challenged people to do this over and over, and then it's always some kind of cope that comes with it. But I challenge every single person who's listening, download, if not Celine Wallet, try maybe PayTaco Wallet, right? Maybe try Electron Cash, maybe try Zapit, right? Stack Wallet even. Stack Wallet is probably the number one multi-coin wallet, in my opinion. If you're a BTC, XMR, or BCH person, like Stack Wallet's great. I had the pleasure of being on the Stack Wallet podcast at 1.2 with Jeremy. It was great.
Okay.
Jeremy, the Bitcoin Cash podcast. I mean, but yeah, I mean, like I said, just use them side by side. It's literally clear as day which one is better. Like, I don't even need to make a case on the technicals or anything, which are also just superior. And then, of course, there's the counter argument: why not BCH, right? Well, hash and price are like easily the biggest arguments against us right now. Overall network effect. Like, if you look at our chain, like our blocks are, like the actual block size utilization is very tiny. Like, we struggle to hit 1 megabyte blocks. Not always, but like, you know, if I
what's
were to
like
pull
the
up,
daily
like,
average transaction volume on BCH.
I don't know. I can look this up right now. I run an Explorer, so if you give me a sec.
Yeah, yeah. Look it up.
Let's see. Transaction stats. Oh, right. Those are the graphs. I don't know. If I just look at, like, the last 10 blocks, we've got an average of, like, 150 transactions per block.
Okay.
Just on the last 10.
So there's people using it.
Right. It's not like nobody uses BCH. I mean, I use BCH as my primary currency. I earn my income in BCH. I do most of my spending in BCH. And most of the people in my circle that I work with in BCH could say the same. Probably most of the people that attended the BCH Bliss conference that was last month are in a similar boat where even if they're not necessarily earning in BCH, they're probably doing a lot of their spending. Like, they actually use it, right? And there are, I think one of the big things that differentiates us from other cryptos is that we do still have an internal ecosystem. So even though, you know, NFTs and stuff aren't new, and you do see that kind of thing, like Solana has its own internal ecosystem. The difference between BCH and another crypto that does have its own ecosystem is that we're still focused on the peer-to-peer cash use case. So I think being able to combine those two, like, okay, I already like BCH as my money, and then it can also do all of this other stuff on top of it, like crypto tokens, right? There's a lot of value there beyond just JPEGs and beyond just shitcoins. Right, it's a verifiable proof that something happened, and that's really worth something. So I just think we haven't come anywhere near our potential yet, and it's really the differentiating case is the peer-to-peer cash, right? So because I value BCH's money, that means the smart contracts on BCH are actually worth something because they're operating on real assets. Like, if I have something easy like a will, like I want to pass down 100 BCH to my kids because that was what I worked for over my entire life. I can use a smart contract to enforce that. I don't even need a lawyer, right? But that if I did the same thing on, say, Ethereum, does it have the same value? No, because the properties of each coin is different, right? So Ethereum, it's expensive to transact. It has scaling issues, right? So the smart contract, we're not actually trying to use that as cash. So when I execute a smart contract, it's only internal to the ecosystem. The fact that I'm using BCH in the real world lets us have both. And I think that's where you really start to get the value of crypto in general, smart contracts, all of the other stuff that we get for free, like passwordless logins and all this other stuff. If I'm already using a robust crypto wallet, why don't I also just go ahead and use that to log into everything? Okay, why don't I also have airlines give me boarding passes that are NFTs? Why not have event tickets be NFTs? You know, all of these kind of things. I think that's where the future is going to be. And then on top of every financial tool that you can imagine can also be expressed in Bitcoin script for the most part, especially on BCH, where we've done so many VM upgrades. Meanwhile, BTC is over here arguing whether or not they want to activate opcat, right?
I want to get into like the difference between the two protocols and like what's been done to BCH, I guess, since the 2017 split. Like what kind of optimizations have you guys done
for sure? Okay,
regular
so
Bitcoin, BTC.
Just as a note before we get into that, just forgive me if I do make any mistakes on that. Like, the highly detailed node protocol level technical stuff is something that I would say I have like maybe a 70-80% overall grasp on. So if there's some inaccuracies here and there, I apologize.
Okay, no worries.
But overall, and also some of the earlier history I'm not as familiar with as more recent events, because I didn't get it until 2021. Yeah. But I do know, so obviously in 2017, there was the chain split pre-Segwit. So we have pre-Segwit Bitcoin. From there, it's just a simple block size increase. Basically, to condense things, it's up to 32 megabytes as a baseline. I was going to do it chronologically, but it also just... we should mention ABLA, the adjustable block size limit algorithm.
That just happened like a month ago or something.
Just happened last month. And yeah, that was what we celebrated with the conference. It was great. So now we have dynamic block size. It works slightly different than Monero's, where it only works on the block size. It doesn't work with the incentives at all.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's very similar conceptually. Like, yep, more volume means bigger block size, less volume, it shrinks down a little bit.
Is there a limit? 32,
there is a... Yeah, there is a built-in limit of it's not going to grow faster than what old school BIP 101 would have, which is double the growth per year. So under like the most extreme conditions, we about double the maximum block size per year.
Okay.
Which is what BIP 101 was going to do. And then it's not really going to exceed that rate just because of how the algorithm is built. So in super duper extreme load, you could still have fee pressure. Like you would still have the fee market the same way. See, the difference is there's also no replace by fee on BCH. That's also a new invention that came later for okay. BTC. Not having replace by fee and having the first seen rule for nodes means that double spends are almost non-existent on the network. And especially for standard transactions, they're pretty much completely non-existent, like negligently existent, or negligibly rather existent, like you're basically not going to see a double spend on the standard transaction. And that's because we have double spend proofs. So if nodes detect that there are two transactions that are trying to spend the same inputs, it will then issue a double spend proof to the entire network. This takes like less than 3 seconds overall to like propagate over the network. So if I'm like a merchant, I can run POS software that's listening for the double spend proof. And if you try to pull off a double spend, which has to be done with minor collusion, mind you. You can't just like do this off of, say, like a modded Selenium wallet or something. You'll just get a big warning on your POS software that says, hey, this dude's trying to double spend you. And then, by the way, it was rejected, but you might want to like look into that. Oh, and I'm probably on camera or something. So like when it comes to the practical application of like, oh no, you can double spend on BCH. Like some people try to make that argument like in the most nitpicky technical way possible. Yeah, if I'm a miner, I can still play reorg games if I have the hash power to do it. But in practical effect, it just doesn't happen. You're not going to get double spent on BCH. And so where you might want to wait for a confirmation might be if I'm like Coinbase or Binance, right? And I can do a USD withdrawal right away. That might be something where you might want to wait for a confirmation because it could actually be like a miner that is trying to collude on making some big money off of that. That would make sense. But for pretty much every other use case, zero conf is completely safe on BCH. So what that means is our transactions are basically instant. You can do even like complex DeFi transactions all on big zero conf chains. And in fact, our Cauldron swap, which is, they call themselves the fastest swap contract in the world. And I would actually believe that because UTXOs are amazing. You can literally just go on their website, cauldron.quest, and mess around with our token ecosystem and do some swaps and see how quick that is. It's great. Stake, unstake, do swaps, withdraw, deposit into your wallet. It can all just be done really quickly and easily, like you don't have to wait.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess as far as more protocol upgrades, like we've introduced a slew of new opcodes, most notably 32-bit, or I'm sorry, 64-bit math, and let's see, pay to script hash 32, which helps with allowing more script in an address, basically. And then the introspection opcodes that let you see the contents of inputs, outputs within a script, which is very powerful. And then, of course, cache tokens adding on top of that effectively makes our script VM Turing complete if you were to consider a transaction chain, the ticker tape. So that means that with cache tokens, we can output state, like basically anything into a token. You can commit any data into a token. And then you can read that data in any other smart contract and verify that that data is what it says it is and came from where it says it came from. And that's really powerful because that means you can compose these scripts together. So I'll try to think of an example. I can mint a BCH Guru NFT, and then I, somebody completely unrelated to the Guru team, can then look on the blockchain, find everybody who has a Guru NFT, and then airdrop them some other token. That some other token can be used, I don't know, let's say you can, right, you can go onto the cauldron swap. But so it's like, okay, you can compose all of these different tokens together and make them do different things. Another example is there's an NFT called Emerald DAO. It was one of the very first NFTs minted on BCH. It's just a vault, basically. It's a vault contract. So deposit 0.1 BCH. After 1 year of a time lock, you can withdraw that BCH and destroy the NFT in the process if you do. Or you can keep the NFT. So it's a very simple contract. So I could say, let me make a contract that takes any Emerald DAO and any BCH Guru as two different inputs and then output some completely unique NFT based on what you gave it, right? Even though those are two completely independent projects, my smart contract that I'm writing independently can interface with those, know that it's an Emerald DAO and a Guru, and do something completely different with it. And so when you extrapolate that outside of just JPEGs and stuff like that, you could use these NFTs for things like supply chains. Like you could have incentives and guarantees where like I stake some money as a promise to delivery. You get that money back if there's like a failure to deliver or something, if I'm like a shipping company. Or if, because there's always middlemen in the supply chain, right? So if I am a store, I need to get the SKUs, the manufacturer needs to produce those, right? So you can have all of these incentives and guarantees contractually bound in a smart contract where that money is staked and accounted for and can all be transacted with instantly and cheaply. So, I mean, when you look at use cases like that, we're just completely decimating the banking infrastructure at that point. Whereas if we rewind to 2015, Magic Internet money was still cool before we had Cash App. Now we have Cash App. Now the European Union has instant bank transfers. So why do we need Magic Internet money anymore? Well, there's still so much friction for a lot of different people, like artists, sex workers. Those are what I would say are a lot of the advantages, upgrades over BTC, just kind of really leaning into the overall mission of what Bitcoin was supposed to be, not just peer-to-peer cash, but a peer-to-peer cash system.
I guess I want to take it back to the SegWit thing, because SegWit was sold to the BTC community as like, it would fix transaction malleability, which apparently was a huge problem, but it seems like BCH never fixed that and isn't having problems with it. And then it also paved the way for Lightning, which is, it's a whole other topic that I don't really want to get into. But like they made different decisions for their scaling path is what I'm trying to say. And like, how big of a difference is this like SegWit, no SegWit thing? Because like SegWit was like sold as like the solution for scaling. It was going to make Lightning be like the problem solver for all of Bitcoin's problems. And we've seen like in the past 10 years that hasn't played out that way. Whereas BCH chose not to implement SegWit, like what advantages or disadvantages did BCH like maintain or give up? Like what trade-offs did they make, I guess, by not implementing SegWit?
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't think we're missing out on anything from not having SegWit. Like something like what Litecoin did with Mimblewimble, I guess, might be kind of cool, but I think that there are better ways to do privacy on chain too, especially because we're not averse to hard forking.
Okay. I want to get into the privacy in BCH as well, because like I'm super interested in privacy in crypto. So, but let's continue your thought. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. So no problem. So SegWit, I mean, it came with the malleability fixes. As far as I understand that was mostly, like you said, just to get Lightning to work. BCH actually did address malleability in other ways. Okay. And that's one of those things where I would genuinely say that I'm out of my depth in terms of protocol knowledge and what specific things contributed to that, because it's just something that I do the research on. But I do know that BCH has addressed malleability in significant ways, whatever the problem was back then, like we just don't have that problem now, but I couldn't actually tell you like what that problem was. I just simply don't know.
Okay.
I could defer to other people and be like, yeah, I know that I've seen people talking about this and know that it's something that we've done.
Okay, yeah, I'm not super technical, so that's fine. And then my other question, I guess, would be the script. Like Bitcoin script and BTC is very, very rudimentary. It's very limited. You can't really do complex smart contracts with it. How did BCH alter the script to give it all this extra capabilities that we see in the BCH ecosystem?
So the real keys are going to be reactivating some of those old app codes like OpMol, OpCat.
Okay.
You know, so you can do math, and then the rest of it, really, the power that gets unlocked is by introspection and iCash tokens. So Bitcoin has always had Bitcoin script, like you said. You can do some kind of contracting on BTC. In fact, Lightning Network is based on smart contracts on BTC. Mm-hmm. Also, one thing about the SegWit, sorry to rewind for a sec, but the major thing about SegWit is that it actually destroys the incentives of Bitcoin in terms of the data capacity stuff, because if you have to pay byte for byte for your transaction, like that's, you know, the original spam protection, that's the way that miners get paid in the Bitcoin endgame, whereas SegWit has the discounted SegWit block space,
yeah,
where it's only a quarter of the cost, and that's where we have all of this bloat coming from, things like ordinals and all this other stuff that's happening. And so when people are like, oh yeah, if you just increase the block size, we're just going to get more garbage. Well, no, not if the protocol is actually well designed. It's not a good design to discount some data over others. It just simply doesn't make sense. It's not really in line with the original design. It completely breaks the incentives. And you can see how that ripple effect has applied over time. On top of the fact that the block weight part of the code that has completely replaced the block size constant. So the block size constant doesn't actually exist in the Bitcoin core code base anymore. It is entirely a calculated block weight that is very highly obfuscated. If you look at the pull request that Greg Maxwell did for that, it's like, I'm a developer. I'm looking at this. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, it's just so obfuscated. And so that's, in my opinion, like the modus operandi of like how all of this propaganda works. This is how the NPC army works. It's like, it's all obfuscation. It's all, oh, let's not talk about tech. Let's talk about philosophy, right? Like, except there's actual tech here and there's actual humans who developed this tech. So we just want to gloss over that. But anyway, so that was just a whole spiel about SegWit. SegWit broke Bitcoin, just period. And that's the moral of that story.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that the discounted witness data has created a huge amount of problems, you know, with ordinals and stamps and all this, and Bitcoin's fee environment combined with the block limit and all that has really just rendered it unusable for peer-to-peer cash. So I guess back to the scripting, like you guys enabled all the opcodes that were taken out. Is there anything else that was added to give it like the, I guess, almost Turing completeness that you mentioned?
Yeah, that's again, like I said, introspection and cash tokens,
okay,
are really the key. Introspection allowing you to see the inputs and outputs of what your script is actually processing. So like the actual transaction you're working within before it's even, I guess, like fully processed, I guess is maybe not the best way to put it. But anyway, I'm in the script. I can see what transaction I'm working in within the script, work with that data. What's in my input? What's in my output? We know because we have opcodes for that. Finally, cash tokens allowing me to output any arbitrary state to an NFT and reread that in another contract. So you can have any amount of basically multi-threading. You can have like covenants, recursive covenants, identity tokens, just like a whole, basically anything that you think of that requires a crypto proof of something, you can do it with a cash token.
We'll get into the DeFi stuff on BCH as well. But let's talk about privacy. I know that there's like a mixer that Wasabi Wallet version 2.0 took inspiration from. Like it allows you to mix like uneven UTXOs. Mm-hmm. Like before.
So we have Cash Fusion, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Cash Fusion, yeah. That's what it's called. All right. Like I guess let's get into it. Explain how privacy works on BCH.
So Cash Fusion is basically the best that we've got for privacy. And admittedly, like, I think this is probably one of the most easily reachable legitimate counter arguments against BCH is probably going to be on the privacy front, other than like the whole price and hash thing. So cash fusion does actually work really well. Like CoinJoin is conceptually works really well. Being able to fuse any amount of inputs and get a different amount of outputs out, have that being coordinated over multiple people, multiple wallets. It definitely breaks chain analysis. Roger Ver, I believe, was on Bitcoin Cash podcast episode 100. And he went on the record saying that he has a friend in chain analysis. He asked his friend, hey, here's some cash fusion transactions. Like, show me what you got. And chain analysis friend said, we got nothing. So it does work very well, but there is the added burden of you have to actually leave cash fusion running in your wallet often or frequently if you are transacting heavily. To have like the maximum amount of privacy on BCH, you would never reuse an address and you would use cash fusion after every single transaction probably. And you would run it, you know, however many rounds as you think is feasible, probably at least three. You're technically safe after one fusion round, but just the more that you break that link, the better. And then the last thing about privacy is we do have atomic swaps with Monero, which is, in my opinion, pretty big. So you can kind of get the best of both worlds because Monero trades off some scripting and scalability in exchange for the privacy. Yeah. And BCH just simply is not going to compare with, I can't see sender, receiver, or amount. I am personally interested in doing some research to figure out what it would take to get something like Zcash's shielded addresses into BCH. But that's just something I also have not done the research on yet. It was something that just kind of came to mind recently, and I've only just started looking into it, but maybe I'll write my first chip.
With the CoinJoin cash fusion in BCH, how does it stack up to like, say, Samurai Wallet, Zero Link, or Join Market, or some of these other CoinJoins that we see like in the Bitcoin BTC ecosystem?
So as far as I'm aware, all of the other different types of CoinJoin have various trade-offs. And in fact, even cash fusion does, because it does still unfortunately require on a central coordination server. And now that coordination server can't actually interfere or see your transaction anyway. It's all blind, players are blindly sending their signatures and their outputs to that server over Tor. So the server literally can't interfere or cheat or anything or de-anonymize anybody. But there's still that reliance on a central server. So if that server gets pulled, well, now we got to go find liquidity on a different server. And I think this is after Samurai had their Whirlpool get taken down. I think BTC, maybe people started like their own Whirlpool server or something, or maybe there's a lot of Whirlpool servers. The problem.
Yeah, there's several right now. They open source. Wasabi. Yeah. Wasabi open source.
Okay.
Yeah. Samurai. There's Ronin Dojo, which is like a node that you run with like Samurai's like Whirlpool software, like integrated into it. And if you self-host it, like you're unaffected by the Samurai thing, like you can still coin join. But like since Wasabi shut their business down a couple of weeks ago, their last update was that they changed the wallet so that it can use like any coin join coordinator. And then the community has launched, I think there's like 10 or so different coordinators that you can choose from. It's like really, really new. So I don't know if like anybody's even using it yet, or if there's liquidity or volume or anything like that.
Yeah. But that's really the main problem. And that's actually the reason that we only have one cash fusion server. So actually around the time that the Tornado Cash dev got arrested, whoever was running the old fusion server just stopped running their fusion server. So somebody spun up a new one. Nobody really knows who that person is. But just everyone switched to just using that one. So the liquidity does have to stay kind of pooled. Otherwise there's nobody to fuse with.
Yeah.
So my dream is to implement cash fusion with something like Nostr being the coordination backend. And I know somebody over on the BTC side is actually working on something called Joinster, which I think is effectively that. So it's something that I absolutely want to look into if somebody else isn't beating to it.
Yeah. I actually was just reading about Joinster recently. There's also a CivKit, which isn't like a coin join, but it's like also using Nostr for like peer-to-peer trading. So I guess after you use Joinster, you would use CivKit to trade your mixed UTXOs or something. But okay. So, and then With the privacy being centralized with one coordinator, are you guys concerned at all that you would meet the same fate as like Samurai or be forced to shut down like Wasabi?
Anybody can just start up a new coordinator server at any time. It's just a matter of getting the community all onto that server. And so like, yeah, the government could play whack-a-mole, but ultimately the solution is something like Nostr as a backend. The protocol itself can stay the same. It's just the way that you find peers and like the, it would just take longer to get fusions, but it could all be asynchronous.
And then departing from the privacy topic, but focusing on the atomic swaps, aside from Monero atomic swaps, like are there any other atomic swaps with other blockchains for BCH?
Not any other L1s that I'm aware of, other than I guess ThorSwap kind of does something like that. We can do something similar to like drive chains where you have like pegged side chains. Nobody's really doing that on BCH.
Is there any interest for drive chain in the BCH community?
Like there's definitely interest in like pegged side chains of some sort, whether it's like implemented the same as drive chains, I'm probably not. But I mean, I definitely know there's interest for pegged sidechains because there used to be smart BCH, which I kind of don't really like talking about because it's just a horrible blemish on BCH history. And it's frankly like unrelated to BCH. It was an Ethereum sidechain that had a two-way peg, but the two-way peg was centralized and then exchange exploded. BCH community got run cold. But yeah, I mean, something like that where you had an actual smart contract enforced two-way peg that's actually secure, that's something that we can do now with the introspection and cash token stuff. So I do know that Matthew Gukins, the creator of the Cashenize wallet and massive pioneer of new stuff on BCH using our new technologies, he has been doing something along those lines, like where he's just been working on like peer-to-peer the peg sidechain contracts. That's something I actually just saw, I think, on Bitcoin Cash Research, like very recently. He was just working on an updated version of that.
What about DEXs? Like, are there any DEXs in the BCH ecosystem? And then have you guys like talked to any of these other DEXs like Decred or Basic Swap or Havino or anything like that to get BCH added to these for like peer-to-peer decentralized trading?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I guess the second question first, the BCH community is honestly kind of insular because we're kind of the only ones doing anything. Like we just stay in our lane basically. Like we kind of have inroads with the other like peer-to-peer cash coins, like Monero, Litecoin, like Dash, Nano. But overall, like nobody else is really doing it like us. We kind of stay in our lane. We're building our own stuff. So that kind of leads into the first part of your question. Yeah, there's DEXs on BCH. We have Cauldron Swap is probably the premier one, cauldron.quest. You can trade any fungible token on there. And then tapswap.cash, you can trade any non-fungible or fungible on there. There's also fex.cash, which comes from our friends in China because they kind of have their own kind of insular community going on. They kind of do their own thing on top of protocol as well. There's not all that much crosstalk, but there's a little bit. Those are the only three that I'm immediately aware of.
Okay.
And then I guess there's also like SideShift, there's ThorSwap, stuff like that.
Okay, like swappers. Right on. And then I guess let's get into the DeFi stuff. Like BCH has pretty much like a full-fledged DeFi ecosystem that could be called comparable to like what exists in the Ethereum EVM world, right? Like you can do pretty much all the same kind of stuff. Can you detail that for us?
Yeah. So on Cauldron Swap, you can, it's a lot like Uniswap, you know, you can stake, you can earn APY on each swap. There's no central exchange token, I think is a big difference. So with the Cauldron Swap, it all works with base layer BCH as the intermediary, not like a Cauldron token. So I guess probably the easiest way to explain the current state of BCH DeFi is to focus on two separate projects, and those are BCH Guru and Unspent App. Okay. BCH Guru is probably the premier NFT collection right now. They're in their wave 3 out of 5 mint right now at bch.guru. They have a price prediction game that's powered by their NFTs and their fungible token called Guru. Anybody who has a Guru NFT at the end of their fifth wave will get airdropped a certain amount of Guru tokens based on the quality of their collection. So they already did this airdrop one time for people who were in for the beta, the first two waves. And they airdropped FURU tokens to everybody who had a BCH Guru. The FURU token can be used to play the price prediction game right here, right now. If you go to bch.guru, there's a link to it. You can pick up some FURU tokens, if you don't already have them, from Cauldron Swap using your BCH. So if you have base layer BCH, go to Cauldron Swap, click on FURU, put some or do your swap, get some FURU into your wallet. Now you can play the FURU game. Okay. Oh, well, you want an NFT avatar for your FURU. Where can I get one of those? Well, you can go to TapSwap and do the same thing. You'll use Wallet Connect, connect your wallet. You can buy a Guru NFT or maybe a BCH Bliss Jessica NFT also works. And get that up in your wallet and Wallet Connect to BCH Guru. Now you have your avatar. All right, so I want to, the game is pretty cool itself. It lets you, like I said, predict prices. It's a player versus player. So you and I both go on to the Guru price prediction game. I want to stake 10,000 FURU that the price is going to be something that you don't know. I'm what my guess is. You see this offer listed. Oh, I'll see your 10,000. I think the price is going to be, and you put in what you think it's going to be. It's double blind. Once we both have, or once you've submitted your offer, the game starts because you're player two. Okay. I can just post an offer. It just sits there for like up to 24 hours. So anybody can accept it in that time. But you don't know what my prediction was until you put yours in. So let's say I think BCH is going to be $400 on June 27th. And so that's what my bid was. You say, I think it's going to be $300 on June 27th. Okay, cool. So we both put that in. You put your 10,000 FURU in. So whoever wins, whoever is closest to their prediction, gets that whole 20,000 FURU pot. And of course, that's real money because then you can go back to Cauldron Swap, turn that into real BCH. And that's real money because I can use my BCH to, I don't know, book a flight to Ljubljana to go to BCH Wars.
And is there like a lot of volume or users that are like minting tokens and making avatars and using these NFTs and stuff like within the BCH community?
I think BCH Guru was really popular in the first two waves, like sold out really quickly. But then that's basically everybody in BCH who's interested is already in. So wave three is going pretty slow. And that's really just reflective of the overall small size of the BCH community. I mean, going back to earlier, we were talking about our average block size. Like there's only like 150 transactions in a block on average right now for like the last 10 blocks that I just looked at.
Yeah.
So like, yes, people are using BCH. Is it a ton of people? No, but they are making use of what's there. So there are actually stats on the BCH Guru page. There's a subsection called Guru Science, and that's got the whole breakdown of market activity, all the trait data for the NFTs. And then if you go onto the game itself, there's a tab that says community, and that's got all of the stats on the volume of FURU. You've got a plot point of all of the different predictions, which I think is really cool. All of those kind of stats. So like they're going really big on having like these cool dashboards that give you like all of this great insight into what's going on with their price predictions, what's going on with their ecosystem, et cetera. And so while the volume is not crazy high or anything, it's extremely promising. You would be getting in really early right now. So I guess going on to, before I get to unspent, this is a nice little lead into it. If you have a BCH Guru NFT, you get to earn dividends once the full game, once the full release of the game comes out, because with the full release of the game, not only will you be able to use the FURU token to play for free with no additional fees, you can also use straight BCH. And the straight BCH, there is like a fee to play. Like I can't remember the exact fee, but some part of that BCH is you have to pay in order to play the game. So if you have FURU tokens, you can play for free. That adds value to the FURU tokens. So for the BCH gameplay, anybody who holds a BCH Guru NFT will get 2% like across all of the NFT sets. So there's 10,000 NFTs. So 2% of the fees earned by the game go to the NFT holders. So the more of those NFTs you have, the more of that overall 2% you get. And so if BCH fulfills its goal of becoming the number one cryptocurrency and even the global reserve currency, and we have this really great DeFi ecosystem, and there's actually like an economic model that makes these tokens have value. And there's on top of that incentives to hold and invest in these gurus in order to support this team, et cetera. Like, it's all just really neatly packaged, and you can see how that snowballs. Okay, so now I'm an early guru holder, and 4 years from now, this game is actually like popping off because it's like the best price prediction game on the whole crypto market. I'm just making passive income now. Like, yeah, that's great. And that's real income. That's not just, I have to speculate on NFTs. That's, I can just hold these forever and keep making my share of that 2%.
So are you guys like focusing on doing any like bridges with other chains or anything like that to kind of make the DeFi ecosystem expand on VCH? Like, are you looking into wrapped assets or anything like on Ethereum chains or anything like that?
I don't see a world where we wrap BCH on other chains, but I do see a world where we build like one-way bridges. So like, oh, you want to import your genuine Bored Ape from Ethereum? Okay, we might have like an Ethereum to BCH bridge that will burn it on the Ethereum side and like remint it on the BCH side or something like that. I do know that the smart BCH people were really interested in the same thing because they're an Ethereum clone. So there actually does exist a bridge to get smart BCH assets onto cash tokens. So I would actually really love to see if that kind of thing was expanded to other EVM style chains, or even like Solana. I don't think it's quite an EVM style chain, but it's got that whole NFT thing going on, right? So
yeah,
if there was a way to bridge my Solana assets onto cash tokens, I think that could only be good for the BCH ecosystem. But I don't really see us building a way back out because I don't see the value in that, right? Again, going back to our contracts and whatever work on the base layer money, you have to value it as money to begin with. Nobody values Solana as money.
Yeah, I agree. Solana is more of a gambling token than actual like store of value or actual money that you would spend. What about the increased demand that we've been seeing, like with Bitcoin's high fees, particularly since the halving? I've been noticing a lot of people like in Africa and Latin America and stuff posting about BCH as like the more usable version of Bitcoin. Have you guys, as the BCH community, like noticed an influx of people from the developing world adopting BCH?
As far as I'm concerned, they've always been there. In fact, with Selene Wallet, Argentina is the second highest user count, like by country, after the US. And it's like actually really close. So like they're actually getting a lot of value out of like our wallet because it does what it says on the tin. It's peer-to-peer cash. And like you're saying, well, if you've got a hyperinflating currency or, you know, other economic issues, lack of banking infrastructure, et cetera, yeah, this stuff is a godsend for them. BTC, what's the point of running a node that I can't afford to transact on that network on? It just doesn't make sense. So we've always had a fairly decent ecosystem. As far as I know, it's like thriving really well in Nigeria, in like Lagos. I'm not sure how it's pronounced, sorry. But I know they're doing a lot of great work there. There's like a festival coming up next month. And I know they've just been going pretty like hard on just overall BCH promotion in that area for quite a few years now. I do know that Argentina has also been doing the same. Venezuela has been doing the same. Some of the Caribbean islands as well, right? So we can look at all of these different places that have kind of started to develop into BCH hotspots from the developing world, as we're saying, but also in other places like in Townsville, Australia, and in Tacloban City in the Philippines, we're starting to see in more of the quote unquote developing world as well.
I saw a post from some Venezuelan BCH guys, and then I've seen a bunch of different posts from Africa about people using BCH. And then I interviewed Ray, who's the CEO of No One's, which is like a peer-to-peer crypto exchange that focuses primarily in Africa and like Kenya and Nigeria and stuff. And he was saying that like, he's like a hardcore Bitcoin maximalist, like BTC maximalist. And he was. And like in the last like few months, he's kind of recanted and like realized that like BTC is unusable for people in the developing world. And he said that BCH and Monero have been like the two coins that have like stepped into that vacuum and taken up a lot of the transaction volume. So I was just curious, like if you guys as part of the community have like noticed that, but it's interesting that you say that it's always kind of been that way.
So. Yeah. But what we do notice are the massive narrative shifts going on. Because I mean, yeah, people like Ray coming out and just being so vocal the way that he is. And you know, we're seeing a lot more of the influencer class of BTC starting to kind of concede and be like, huh, maybe there is something to this BCH thing. And a lot of them are getting grilled for it because the
Andreas Antonopoulos came out and said something about that as well recently, like in the last.
And it's just like, okay, well, there's been so many people who've been saying all of this stuff for years. Why didn't you listen then? It's because of that propaganda.
Yeah, I would say that like Bitcoin Cash lost the narrative war because of the censorship and propaganda, and then like the reputational damage that the Bitcoin Cash ecosystem took was pretty bad. Like it took years for it to recover.
I mean, we kind of dug our own grave in a lot of ways too. Like,
yeah, it took years for it to recover.
We can't just sit here and pretend like we did nothing wrong, right? I mean, I know a lot of people would probably come at me with a pitchfork about that. I can already hear some voices, but if we look at it, okay, so I could see one of the arguments back in 2017. I wasn't there, but like apparently, you know, Bitcoin.com was like trying to portray BCH as like the real Bitcoin, and that's why it's still contentious to say that today. And blah, blah, blah. Okay, so on one hand, this is like the future of humanity's money that we're fighting for, so we can't really take these things lightly. On the other hand, am I okay with like deception? Not necessarily, not really. Like, is it necessarily deception is what I mean to say. Like, that's also kind of up for debate. Like, so I just prefer that we are fighting clean, and I'm glad that we're far enough along in history that, okay, mistakes are made. Associating with Craig Wright turned out to be like the worst
idea. Yeah, that was
idea, right?
The dumbest thing that could have possibly happened. Craig Wright
don't have
was such an obvious scammer from the beginning. Like, all he had to do was sign with a private key, right, to prove that he was
right. Still to this day.
Yeah, and like a decade later, he still hasn't done it. So like, it was so obvious from the beginning that when Roger aligned himself with Craig Wright, like it was a major hit to his credibility.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're still to this day feeling the ripple effects of some of the decisions Roger has made, some of the influence that Craig had at that time.
And then also the Jihan Wu thing at the time as well, because like Bitmain and Jihan Wu have always been like extremely shady. So like, getting their participation in the BCH community kind of was a bad look as well, which was kind of why I think it was easy for the Blockstream camp to sell the narratives they were able to sell, because they had the villain of Bitmain to point the finger at and say like, no, look, it's a miner controlled shitcoin, right? Like,
yep.
So, I mean, looking back on it now, obviously, like the truth is somewhere in the middle, right? Like, both sides were extremely polarizing and like people picked sides and stuff, but the truth is obviously somewhere in the middle. But at the time, the Jihan Wu thing was a bad look. And then also aligning with Craig Wright afterwards was also a very bad look, which I think made a lot of people very, very skeptical about BCH.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think a lot of that skepticism is melting away now. And it's kind of funny that you say, yeah, the truth is somewhere in the middle, because to me, BCH is the middle. Because we got to think about BTC, extreme small block argument, BSV, extreme big block argument. So like, if we look at BSV, that to me, I always call it the evil villain caricature version of the big block argument. And it's everything that proves the small blockers right about why big blocks are bad. That's literally what BSV is.
Yeah.
But then if you actually, you know, apply some engineering and you actually apply some technical knowledge, you get the middle road. We like to call them Goldie blocks, right? The block size is just right. So now we have BCH. BCH is that middle road truth. And we've really tried to walk that line very effectively and elegantly. Like, and when I say we, I mean, what I really want to emphasize here is BCH is decentralized. So like, am I Roger Ver or Jihan Wu or Amari or Craig or anyone like that? No, I'm just like some dude from Michigan, right? I just decided that I wanted a wallet that didn't suck, right?
You came on the show. Sure. Let's talk about your project.
Sure. I'll get to that in just a second. I want to kind of finish this point about decentralization, and then I'd love to talk about that. Okay. But, you know, you look at somebody like Jeremy, the Bitcoin Cash podcaster, Bitcoin Cash autist, who's been ushering in these great upgrades with the help of the rest of the community. The emphasis is on the rest of the community, right? If you go on Bitcoin Cash research, or you look at any of the actual chips in our chip process, it's so well written and covers so many bases, and we really go out of our way to empirically demonstrate that there is consensus on things in both as qualitative and quantitative of a way as possible. And we really try to do like the due diligence on what are the actual effects on every single decision that we make. We're going to discuss this in depth. We're not going to rush decisions, but we are going to get people to put their stake in one way or another. So do you accept this? Do you reject this? Is we need to discuss it more? Like, some upgrades are easy to get in. Some are, you know, more of a multi-year process. Cash tokens took years and years and years of grinding and refinement and changed multiple hands, leading the way, and really stems from like colored coin research back in like 2013. So if you look at 2013 to 2023, that's how long it took to get cash tokens into Bitcoin, basically. We'll just call it that. And there's so many other proposals that it could have been. And we evaluated the pros and cons of each of them, took the best and worst out of each of them, filtered it down to the most elegant solution that we could possibly think of after years of technical research and debate. And that's how Chip works. So we're doing targeted VM limits now. And like that's something where we can actually do benchmarking on to find out like, okay, what's safe to tweak and what's not, all this kind of thing. And it's just random devs and people who like, yeah, there's merit. Like, it's not just random people, it's people that we know, but they've built the reputation over time. When Bitcoin Cash Autist started with pushing the cash token stuff along, he was nobody. Right. And now he just single-handedly delivered the adjustable block size algorithm. Right. When I came onto the scene, I was a nobody. Right. But I still put my weight in because I care about BCH, and it was just as valid as anyone else. I just built that proof of work over time, and people learned to that they could trust me. And so now I'm in the position I'm in now. That's how a decentralized network and decentralized development works. And that's what I want people to take away from how Bitcoin freaking works.
Yeah, no, I agree. And community involvement is super important. Like, is there a thing like the CCS proposals in Monero for Bitcoin Cash to like fund development and projects and stuff like that? Or is that not a thing?
We've got Flipstarter, which is a decentralized crowdfunding platform. It's basically Kickstarter, but peer-to-peer cash. Okay. We actually just got funded for Selene Wallet on our second successful Flipstarter last March.
Okay.
And a lot of other projects also get their funding that way. And so it's, again, kind of that proof of work and merit aspect. So would I just be able to roll up and ask the BCH community for, you know, a three-digit sum of BCH if nobody had any clue who I am and I had no proof of work to offer? No. But what I did was I worked with another well-known figure in the community, the Bitcoin Cash Podcast, built the wallet with him. We delivered like an MVP, and then we said, hey community, this is what we're going for. It works today. If you want us to keep working on it, like, please fund us so we can work on it. Community was like, heck yeah, we love this, keep going. So we got funded. And you know, with the price increases around that time, it was really great. Price like went from 100 to 300. It was a really good time to have a Flipstarter funded, so that allowed me to go full-time into working on the wallet. And then we got another year of funding last March
nice.
Through the same means. So, yeah, any project can get funding that way. And that's actually one of the biggest points of contention with us and one of our other fork siblings, eCash, which was made by the same guy who originally forked BCH, Amari Sechet.
Okay.
So eCash, the split there was because they wanted to impose effectively a tax on miners. So like 8% of each Coinbase would go to a predetermined address in order to fund development. So it would go to like a dev vault, AKA Amari's wallet. and the BCH community was like, no. And then, so that's why there was yet another fork.
Is Amari still involved in the BCH community?
Not at all. He is 100% in his own thing with eCash.
Okay. Okay. Wow.
And so again, emphasizing that whole decentralized aspect, we kicked out the original founder of BCH effectively. We kicked out Craig Wright. And when I say we, it's the whole community. It's people just deciding enough is enough. No, but nobody is going to be able to interfere with the community and impose things on people that the users of the coin don't want. Mm-hmm. And that's every business, every miner, every developer, every actual user and holder of the coin has stake in the coin. As far as its governance, right? So all I have to do is talk to people who, I guess, effectively make things happen. And that's, again, kind of going into the whole block size war, block stream thing. It's like, well, who controls the repo that powers 99% of all Bitcoin nodes? Core. Oh, yeah, you can run Bitcoin NATs. You're still 0.1% of the overall node count, right?
NATs has a whole bunch of issues, too. Like, Luke Dash Jr. is crazy. I wouldn't run his implementation.
And so it's like, okay, well, what are you going to do? Well, BCH has like four different implementations that you can use right now. They all are in consensus. And they're all controlled by different people. So nobody can really hijack the whole protocol that forces that collaboration. Just it's decentralized, decentralized, decentralized. And no, you should not fear the fork. You just really shouldn't, because people are going to use the chain that brings them value.
Yeah, I would say that Monero has made me realize that you shouldn't fear the fork. Like, not only that, Ethereum as well for is a huge part of that, because like for years, like Bitcoiners criticized like Ethereum and Monero for doing these hard forks, these regular hard forks to upgrade the networks. And the merge, like the Ethereum, like change of consensus to proof of stake, like was supposed to be impossible. It was supposed to be a massive train wreck. And Ethereum pulled it off flawlessly. And then like Monero also has regular upgrades, and they usually pull them off pretty flawlessly. Like there's been a few issues around some of them, but it's completely overblown. Like Bitcoin's fanatical adherence to soft forks only and like backwards compatibility and stuff like that, to me is kind of counterproductive. Like, especially after
It also doesn't
witnessing.
make sense. I mean,
So,
every software on the planet upgrades by
exactly.
all of the
Exactly.
users replacing the binary with the new binary.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, and when you're going for backwards compatibility, I mean, there's multiple ways to approach that too. Like, backwards compatible with what? Like, BCH still loads the same chain from 2009.
Yeah.
I can still spend the same UTXOs that existed back then the same way that I can now. So what backwards compatibility are you talking about? Oh, so like when I read the history of the chain, not even the live UTXO set, maybe the BCH node doesn't sync to the Genesis node. Well, neither would SegWit. If you actually were mining the Genesis client, you're on a separate blockchain, and that's just how it works. No matter what, it is what miners are mining, what users are using, and like the market price doesn't actually matter, because as long as I can trade from you to me, that network still works, functions just fine.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And like that's the thing too, is like price is the only thing that Bitcoin has left. Like if you criticize Bitcoin in any way, like their response is never going to be on the merit of what you're saying. It's going to be, "Oh, look at this chart."
Price chart.
Yeah. Like they have nothing left to stand on. Like 'cause everything else is been surpassed like by other chains. Like other chains are faster, better, more scalable, more censorship resistant, more private. So like for real, it's the only thing they have left. But I don't want to rant about Bitcoin and its shortcomings. I would like to speak about Selene Wallet. Tell us about
Absolutely.
your wallet,
Yeah, man, let's focus on the positives. It's
man.
horrible to ruminate on the past.
Yeah.
So Selene Wallet, our mission with Selene Wallet was to make a wallet that is so easy and accessible that your mom can use it, your grandma can use it, your 10-year-old can use it. Like the dude at the store can use it. You can introduce people to BCH in a minute or less, right? Get on the Play Store. It's a tiny download. You open up the wallet. You're immediately on your wallet screen with your QR code visible. I can just scan you right then and there. Scanner buttons right there on the main screen. Send you some sats. It's instant because BCH is instant. People go, holy crap, I didn't have to sign up for an account. That was super fast. Like, wait, nobody can control this money? That's freaking cool, right? And then the wallet, as you just kind of thumb around on it, there will be other features that you can just discover. There's a new explore tab that we're going to be releasing soon that's going to help you kind of explore more of the ecosystem and like find other stuff that you can use your BCH on. Put like a map in there. We're going to expand out into like POS. And we really just want to truly fulfill the dream of making Bitcoin into peer-to-peer cash, making it the money that I use for my everyday transactions, and becoming the global reserve currency. We are creating the tools.
And where are people spending Bitcoin Cash these days? Like, I know there's a fair amount of merchant adoption, and in like the Monero world, there's like Monerica, there's Monero Market, there's like these resources where you can find merchants that accept Monero. Like, is there something similar that exists in the Bitcoin Cash world so I can take my Selene wallet and go use my Bitcoin Cash like to buy real goods and services?
Yes, there are. So in terms of meet space, like if you want to go do this in the real world, some of those cities I mentioned earlier, like the entire island of St. Kitts, Townsville, Australia, Tacloban City, Philippines, Lagos, Nigeria, Buenos Aires, Argentina, Miami, Florida even has some BCH activity going on down there. Those are all places where you can spend BCH in the real world today. Ljubljana, Slovenia, where we had the conference also. Like I paid for the whole hotel in BCH. A lot of the stores in the city were using GoCrypto, which is a payment processor, but they accept BCH. So you can
I'm familiar with GoCrypto.
Yeah. And so, yeah, in the real world, yeah, there are plenty of places. Is it, you know, sweeping the whole world yet? Yeah, obviously not, but no crypto is, right? So there are those hotspots, and it's developing nicely. And then as far as, like, if I'm, you know, just some pleb in the U.S., not in Miami, and I want to get some stuff, there's Bitgree, which lets you make orders on Amazon. There's also the various services that let you get gift cards. So, like, you can use, like, CoinsGate or something and redeem BCH directly for gift cards, no KYC. You can go on to, like, Travela to book flights and hotels and, like, touristy stuff directly in BCH. I've been using that pretty extensively recently. BitPay also lets you do that, but BitPay's got KYC and stuff. But you can buy a whole lot of stuff off of BitPay. And then of course you can always find various people willing to trade you peer to peer if they trust you. Like if you were like friends with people on Telegram, I bought, like my computer monitor peer to peer off of someone on Telegram. And that was pretty cool.
Nice.
And then of course there's, all the DeFi stuff in the NFT ecosystem and all that kind of stuff. So you can, you know, call real goods, I guess, stuff that you can spend your BCH on.
Cool. And like, I guess in the BCH ecosystem, there's this push for like it being like freedom money, right? Like I would say the BCH ecosystem has always been like the more idealistic side after the schism when Bitcoin split. Like I feel like a lot of the like libertarians and like agorists and people like that, like the anarcho-capitalists went more to the BCH side than the BTC side. Is there still like that whole like sentiment in the community?
Absolutely. 100%. Without a doubt, we are all 100% about that. That is the core driving mission, is global reserve currency, freedom money for the world. Everybody can use it. Like if everybody can't use it, or if it requires custody, or, you know, anything like that, then we're failing in our mission. If it becomes too expensive to use, we're failing in our mission. The cypherpunk philosophy is alive and well in BCH.
I guess like the next thing I want to ask you about is BCH gets criticized a lot from BTC Bitcoiners and then just randomly from other crypto communities. Do you want to address any of the criticisms for BCH? Like you mentioned hash rate being...
You don't really have to anymore. I mean, yeah. I guess for the sake of your podcast, yeah. It's a little... I'm about to come off hot and be like, nah. I'm just kidding. But you know, like we've just spent so much time refuting crap on Twitter, and like you can actually see the fruit of that effort now, because I mean, first off, I'm here talking to you. And then you used to even be a BTC maximalist, right? So
yeah.
A lot of people like what we were just talking about, Ray, right, coming out being like, wow, this is crap actually. Maybe we should consider other things. And then also, I would say especially around, you know, 2022, 2023. We really started making more inroads with the other P2P Cash communities, like I was mentioning earlier, LTC Dash, even Monero, Nano. We've all had our little debates and whatnot. And overall, I think we've all hashed it out enough among like the people who actually are engaged in those communities that we all know what we agree on, what we disagree on, the validity to our different approaches. We just all leave it at that. May the best coin win. And it's nice to have those alliances. I personally think that it's BCH and Monero that are like the number one and number two coins as far as like what we're going to actually be using in the real world later on.
I kind of agree with that. Like I could see BCH being like the white market coin and Monero being like the more gray and black market coin, you know,
because you can even use like Cash Fusion for gray market activities is perfectly acceptable in my opinion.
Yeah. The only thing that I see is like a flaw with like the opt-in privacy thing is that like if people won't even use like a layer two like Lightning to transact, they'll just go use a different layer one. It's a hard ask to get people to like mix their coins every time they want to spend them or after they receive them and that kind of thing. Like in Bitcoin, BTC, like the CoinJoin world, like nobody does it.
Right.
Even when there the crackdowns and stuff, like there was very little volume. I think like Samurai, which was the most popular one, only had like 8,000 or 9,000 Bitcoin that had been mixed.
To their point, I mean, like they did. I did see increasing liquidity on the Samurai Whirlpool over time. I go to a local BTC meetup That's something that they track. It's like, yeah, we're definitely seeing increasing liquidity. So I think it was becoming more popular, but the fees are prohibitive. And that's a reason, another reason that Cash Fusion is great, because I can actually just run it all day, every day, and it costs only like 1,000 sats per transaction.
And 1,000 sats in the BCH world is what? That's like less than a penny, more than a penny?
Yeah, it's like probably a penny.
50 maybe, cents.
If even that. I don't even think it's a whole penny yet. I think like 3,000 sats is probably a penny.
Okay, cool. So yeah, BCH is still super cheap.
Yeah.
Monero
yeah,
is super cheap. Huge upside cheap,
potential. So. Yeah, absolutely. Oh man, I always feel like I should be mining Monero or something.
Do you mine BCH?
I used to do mining for heat, because Michigan winters can get pretty dang cold, and offsetting my thermostat with electric heat was economically viable for me for a little bit. It turned out not to be last winter, but it was the winter before. So it was fun to experiment with an S9. It was fun to experiment with NiceHash. And I CPU mine on our chipnet, but that's not real money.
CPU mining. Can you still do that in BCH?
Is it like only on our the chipnet testnet? So it's not even for profit. It's just to keep the testnet up.
Ah, okay. I was just wondering if like the hash rate was like low enough to where it was still profitable to mine, like with a laptop, like
Days even on my S9, like the only reason I could consider myself profiting is because I was doing the heat offset. So I was literally heating my room with the miner, and then not having to pay that as part of my heating bill.
Nice. And then with the miners, like, can you use just the exact same miner like that they use for BTC? Like, so if I have like an S9 or S19 or S21 or whatever the new machine is,
like a whole pool could just instantly point their hash rate to BCH. Price discrepancies. It's like more profitable to do one over the other.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you feel like we should talk about?
Probably some unfinished trains of thought, but that's just how I tend to roll when anybody interviews me, is I ramble and forget things often.
Yeah, and I jump around a lot as well. Like, I just interrupt and ask questions that are totally unrelated from time to time.
Oh, there was something you were saying about opt-in privacy, and I actually do somewhat agree with that. I was going to say the secret to, I think, getting people to do things is to make it so they don't have to think about it. You just make it so easy that they don't have to think about it. So, like, one solution to that, I think Zcash is a better approach than CoinJoin, but also if we can just have, I mean, even like Electron Cash has the fusion button, right? And Stack Wallet does too. It's literally one button, you toggle it on, it'll just run fusions all day until you turn it off.
Okay.
So you can kind of just fire and forget. So that's one way, but that does cost you that 1,000 sats per transaction. Some people actually don't want to spend that, right? Because if I leave it on for a week, like, I might actually spend like a couple dollars. Maybe I don't want to do that. But something like Zcash's shielded addresses, I think if that was something where I could just toggle that on or off, that is also like kind of passes the mom test. Like, do you want this transaction to be 100% fully private? Press this button before you hit send. And then people can just do that, or like have it on by default for their wallet or whatever. I like the idea of optional privacy over optional transparency for like auditing purposes and whatnot. Like, I think transparency default is better than obscurity by default.
What's the BCH attitude towards privacy? Like, if like there was an easy way to just drop in like Zcash privacy to Bcash, would the community go for it? Or are there people that find value in transparency and like being able to see exactly what's happening on chain and all that?
I think for the most part, we advocate for privacy. I think, like I said, there's value to a transparent blockchain. But we do want people to have the ability to be private. We want every user to have the ability to be private if they choose. So I think if something like shielded addresses was well proposed, the community would actually be for it. If it was like an upgrade that actually made sense, fit within like how Node and protocol development works, like it was a good chip, evaluated the risks and costs and all of that kind of thing. And it was actually like well thought out and minimal risk and minimal cost, yeah, I think the community would absolutely go for it. Even if there was like some risk and cost, I think a lot of that can be mitigated, or like there can be alternative approaches we look at to improve privacy. I think it just is a matter of what our resources are versus what's necessary on like a day-to-day basis, like a moment-to-moment basis. Because if we have like, let's say, I don't know, there's probably, we can count maybe like up to 50 people who are like actually for realsies moving and shaking things in BCH. So if we've really only got 50 people like pushing us forward, that's very limited manpower. And something like enhanced privacy, because we already have good enough privacy, just hasn't been the highest priority item compared to like developing better wallets or like developing our scripting or DeFi ecosystems and stuff like that.
What about like low-hanging fruit solutions? Like we just saw recently with the fall of Samurai, they rolled out like stealth addresses or stealth payments or whatever, like in Cake Wallet for BTC.
Yeah. We have something similar to that. It's called reusable payment addresses. That just rolled out to the Electron Cash wallet. I'm not fully privy on the technical specs to it, but I do know that it works fairly similarly to stealth addresses.
Okay.
Last time I looked at RPA, there were some drawbacks with it that kind of turned me off to it. And I was hoping, like, it has something to do with like needing a server to like register the address or like needing to be able to signal to other like users somehow. That's another thing that I feel like Nostr solves, is like kind of needing to be able to watch for updates on the address, or it was something like network related in the RPA spec, and I was like, oh, that's like not quite the perfect elegant solution that I think we want for like a reusable payment identity, but it does solve the problem of the reusable. So like we have cash accounts, which the problem with that is it's a one-to-one mapping of username to an address. Obviously for privacy, we want to be able to give you a new address for, it's like if you send to Callisti, like that needs to be a new address every time, so you can't see my full stash. So okay. RPA solves that. It's similar to stealth addresses, but it's not quite the same. There are drawbacks. It'll probably evolve more over time.
Okay. And then like, what about things like confidential transactions that were proposed for BTC, but were never actually implemented? Like,
I'm not sure how those works. Is that like Monero's with like ring signatures and stuff?
Yeah, it's like shielded amounts, like basically. It's like a transaction where you can shield the amount so you can't tell like how much is being sent back and forth.
I'm pretty sure that's how Zcash's addresses work. So that's something I'm interested in doing research on and potentially proposing for BCH myself.
Yeah, man. Like, I guess since your family got home, we can call it, but like, it was awesome interviewing you. This was super interesting. Like, I'm interested in Bcash a lot now that I've kind of changed my opinion on it, but I still haven't really like scratched the surface too much on it. You know, like I'm kind of more in the Monero camp. So like I watch like the Bcash community from afar, and like, you know, I'm interested in what's going on, like when you guys talk about stuff, but I haven't really like kind of gotten involved so much.
Yeah. Well, definitely get involved. We need more people getting involved, talking about it, using it. We got to get more than 150 transactions per block. So help us out. I think stuff to check out, other than the stuff that I've mentioned, afifthofgaming.com. is also really great. It's tournaments that are paid out in BCH. You can go and spin up your guild, get your friends involved, and have a, you know, a weekly game night. There's a bunch of like Magic the Gathering and chess tournaments, and I think also StarCraft tournaments that happen on there, and you can get paid out directly in BCH and enter directly in BCH. And then yeah, definitely check out the Guru game. Maybe mess around with Cauldron. Maybe check out Cash Tokens Studio if you want to try making your own token. Check out the different wallets, find out which one is your favorite.
Selene wallet is available for computer, for mobile.
Just iOS and Android.
iOS and Android? Okay. Yep. And where can people download? It's in the Play Store, it's in the App Store.
It's in Play Store and App Store, or you can go to selene.cash, selene.cash. And that's got the links to both. And it also has a direct APK download for Android.
Well, thanks again, Callisti, for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Be happy to talk again anytime.
When you guys got some new exciting developments, you're more than welcome to come back on the show.
Yeah, stay tuned to the Twitter at KZ Callisti, KALLISTI. And, you know, a lot of the latest updates are going to come through there. Also, check out the Bitcoin Cash podcast at the BCH podcast or BitcoinCashPodcast.com. He's definitely going to be up to date on all the latest stuff as well. Also check out Bitcoin Cash Foundation, BCHF_org on Twitter. He does a weekly news segment as well on like everything that's going on. So I think those are like three really high quality sources for finding stuff out, new developments.
Well, take note, audience.
All right. Thanks for having me, man. It was great talking to you.